Welcome to the Getting the Deal Done podcast series. I'm John Martinka, and my very special guest today is my friend Gregory Kofsky with IBA in Bellevue, Washington. Welcome, Gregory.
Welcome. Thank you.
So, Gregory, let's start out since we're both in the same business, the buy-sell world of small, mid-sized companies. How did you get started in the business?
Well, thank you for asking. It's a family story in that IBA sold my father's veterinary hospital and real estate in Portland, Oregon. And he was impressed with IBA during the sale process. I didn't think much of it at the time. I left and went away to the University of Texas, Macomb School of Business, pursued my first career. And when I returned back to the Northwest in 94, I was talking with my father about what I should do as the next step in my life. And he said, "You're a salesman by personality. You've got an accounting and finance background academically, and you should consider this as a career path. It's a interesting, dynamic world. I like change and variety, and it almost 30 years later, it seems to have been a good fit."
You know, it's very similar to my story in about the same time period and same reasons. It was friend, not family. My friend Ted Leverett, when we were back-to-back presidents of a Rotary Club in Kirkland, and one day after the meeting, he said something to me that I remember being like, "I've always thought you'd be good in this business." And for the same reasons, I like the variety and the interaction with people. And it's been a good career for both of us. So let's talk about being in the business. What do you like most about it?
Well, I think we're from the same fabric, and I'm guessing one of the reasons you like doing this. And I love sharing knowledge and teaching. And that is truly one of my greatest joys in doing this, is the ability to work with a great demographic group, people who've lived the American dream, first generation immigrants, women who were hitting the glass ceiling in the 80s and 90s corporately and started their own companies to have freedom. Gay, lesbian individuals who didn't like the corporate culture, again, took the freedom of entrepreneurship to create their own world. People who started, you know, at their kitchen tables and in their garages with ideas and grew it up to 7- and 8-figure companies. I mean, that's one of my greatest joys, is just hearing their stories and helping them convert their hard work and their vision into an equity event. I mean, what's your favorite reason for doing this?
Well, I've got three, and we already, both of us talked about the variety, but education, like you mentioned, is one, which my mother was quite the educator, and I've written 4 books now. Another is, there's the thrill of a deal. It's hard to get a buy-sell deal done. There are so many pitfalls. There are so many speed bumps on the way. And getting it done is a thrill. And you're helping people. And that's the third reason. I see the results when somebody sells their business. I see the results when a buyer takes control of their life, leaves the corporate world. But they're not the startup person. They're like our old friend Bill Pearsall used to say. They are a re-entrepreneur. And they have made a big, big leap of faith to do that. So
I would share that with you. As you know, my first career, I was a college basketball coach after leaving the University of Texas. And I agree with you. One of the joys of this is the challenge of achievement. And I personally love being paid 100% on performance, where I'm only paid by happy customers when it's completed. I mean, in today's world, there aren't that many people who will put their chips on the table. And at its core, this is a sales profession. And it's big ticket, very sophisticated, nuanced sales.
Yeah, you're right. So what, in your opinion at IBA, what makes a saleable business, and what do you look for when you decide to take on a client other than the earnings? You know, what do you look at in a company and the owner?
Sure. So IBA, we have a very high-touch, old-school process with in-person meetings and phone conversations, Zoom calls, as we decide to take on a project. Our business model doesn't work if we're not performing, because we are paid 100% on performance. I would say the first thing is, do I trust the individual? I want to have someone I can work collaboratively with open and honest communication. So that's important. The second is there a compelling reason to buy this product or service? I do not like representing companies that are simply selling a commodity where it's a price competition. I do like companies where there's knowledge, experience, maybe intellectual property that separates the company. We look at, you know, where they stand in the competitive marketplace, what are their reviews online, market share. All those things go into the selection process. And I would guess, you know, one of the big things is, why are they selling? I do not want to represent a company that they're selling because they see storm clouds on the horizon and this business model's not going to be successful. I mean, one thing that we strive for in sales is we want our clients to get a fair price, but we want the buyer to be successful. As you know, the average buyer stays with a entrepreneurial project 7 or 8 years. We've been around almost 50. I've personally sold one company 4 times. I want them to return to us when they choose to sell, when they've bought through us. How about yourself? What do you use as a selection metric?
You know, you mentioned many of the things, and I usually sum it up, whether it's to a buyer or a seller, in a company, you are looking for a competitive advantage. And it can't be price. You know, there's an old adage, you know, you can have quality, service, and price, but you can have any two of the three. And the ones who compete on price are not the ones that we want to work with, like you. There's the trust. There's the relationship. It has to be a relationship. And it has to be a relationship between buyer and seller. Because if they're either one of their gut feels is, I don't know if I want to do business with this person, there's not going to be a deal, no matter how good the company or how good the buyer.
I will, you know, I believe we're coming up on the decade anniversary of your Pet Rocks book. What differentiated a Pet Rock, and why did you touch on that for that book?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think a lot of people laugh when they say they sold Pet Rocks. And it just tells you what a great marketing campaign can do. And is there any reason to have a Pet Rock? No. I can go on my backyard and pick up 1,000 little rocks. But people paid money for them. So again, you know, if they can sell that, why can't you sell your business? And let's face it, sometimes it's not the business, it's the owner. The owner just can't.
Most certainly. You touched on, it's often the marketing. I mean, when we choose to buy a hamburger as a consumer in the public for a meal, you have a full spectrum of choices. And quality could be a driving element, but it's the ambiance, it's the marketing, it may be the special. That drives you there. At the end of the day, how much difference is there between one hamburger joint and another?
Right. Marketing is always important. And it's marketing when we you're marketing a business for sale or a buyer is marketing themselves to be taken seriously as a buyer. So speaking of buyers, to you, what makes a good buyer?
I think the best deals are done from a foundation of open and honest communication in an environment of full disclosure. So if buyers will be open and honest about their background, their skills, how much capital they're bringing to the deal, their signature power, those sort of things, I believe you have the ability to get traction. I mean, one of my biggest frustrations is buyers who are really guarded on, let's say, their net worth. I'm not asking that to be critical or to limit exposure, but as you and I know, many times there's decision makers beyond the seller in a sale, maybe a landlord, maybe a key vendor that needs to know that the buyer is strong enough to be successful in the future, and they're not vested in whether this deal makes it or not. And I find that the people who communicate and problem solve collaboratively make the best buyers. How about yourself?
I tell buyers you have three things that make you qualified for what you are targeting. One is enough money. Got to have the capital, just like you talked about. What's your net worth? Do you have the liquidity? Do you have the skills and experience to buy and run that business? And then do you have a good personality? And those three things make you qualified to go into the market.
I think it all comes down whether you're an entrepreneur or buying a business or selling a business or even a broker like ourselves. People do business with people they know, like, and trust.
That's right.
And I think people often overlook building the know and like, and you can't get to trust without those first two steps.
You know, this is way different than, you know, buying a piece of real estate where often you, whether it's your house or commercial property, the buyer and seller may never meet. It's a commodity. These are not commodities. These are something special, and they're someone's baby, and they want to make sure it goes to the right person 98-99% of the time. So you mentioned the financial statement, and you mentioned others who want to see it. So let's go to the big one that wants to see it, the bank. What do you look for when you want, you know, when you suggest a bank or a particular banker?
I want, obviously, knowledge and experience. I do not want someone who it's their first rodeo. I also, and I'm probably unique in this on the sell side, I want success from all three vested parties. I want the buyer to buy the business and be successful, not to be undercapitalized. I want the bank to get a good loan and the banker to be proud of that deal, because then they're going to want to do business with you and I again if we give them good projects. And obviously, I want the seller to get the most cash they can and mitigate risk. And personally, I'll take a area of my personal belief. I think one of the issues in the SBA world right now is people as bankers encouraging people to come in 5-10% into a deal. My belief is if a buyer comes in 15-20% in the deal, it makes it a better loan and it allows for more favorable debt service coverages. And honestly, the buyer needs to plan for contingencies that have nothing to do with the business, whether it's economic conditions, new competition entering the market, or elements that weren't there before, which is their executive management ability. They're going to be better or worse, and I've seen both, than the previous owner. And it's no different than at Microsoft, large local company, that I believe the company improved substantially with the change to Satya at the helm of the company. Not that Steve Ballmer didn't do great for many years, but I think anyone who looks at analytically can recognize a positive evolution occurred at Microsoft with that change. And if leadership can impact a behemoth of the size of Microsoft, it definitely can impact a company doing 7-8 million.
Yeah, and I say very often, and you got to be careful saying this to someone who's selling their business, but the buyer is also almost always perceived as a breath of fresh air. And you talked about people getting in skinny, and I can't believe I've seen with the new SBA rules on how little a buyer can put in, that some banks, bankers are saying, yeah, we'll go that low. And I see banks that will go on a 1.1 to 1.15 debt coverage ratio, and that's not going to cover the taxes on the principal payments. And you know, cash flow is king. And you talked about all the different changes to the business, but rarely do people talk about the flip side, the good news. Growth sucks cash. And if you don't have a cash reserve and if you don't have the cash flow, you may have to pass on growth opportunities or pay outrageous fees and costs, interest rates to fund that growth. So, you know, and with almost 2,000 banks lending in this space nationally, and their national matchmakers, we'll call them, they don't like to be called loan brokers. It's more important than ever to have that relationship that you talked about with the bank and banker, that you know they can do these kind of deals and do them the right way.
So. And I think it's psychologically a buyer having more skin in the game. It's just good for the deal. If the more vested you are in the project, the better. And, you know, I've many times sold, and maybe you can share a story specifically, where someone has bought a business and for whatever reason, 3-4 years later, they come back to us and say, I want to sell. It could be a spouse gets relocated, a parent gets sick and they want to relocate to them. It's not the right fit for them. I've had people leave the corporate world, not like the helm, like miss the infrastructure of the corporate world and sell to go back as a talented individual. And if you have more equity, I mean, say you bought a business for $5 million and you've run it for 4 years. It's done close to what you expect. And at time of sale, for whatever reason, it's now worth $4.5 million. So it hasn't declined significantly, but it's worth 10% less. If you don't have a good equity stake, it can be problematic to exit from the business. And I believe going into any investment, you should think ahead of how and when do I plan to exit.
Yeah, I do have a stories. I had, you know, one deal where the buyer, after 3 or 4 years, it just became, you know, he just wasn't happy. It is different when you're the guy that, or gal, that gets all the complaints, signs all the checks, etc., etc. It's your money. But my best story, Gregory, is goes back quite a few years, and there was two guys went in as partnership, and one. And it was a manufacturing business, and they actually did some DoD work. And the one guy was a marketing guy, and the other guy was, he said he was an operations guy. He really was an administrative guy. So they get into this deal, and the lead guy was the marketing guy. He had the most money. He had the biggest share. And after a year and a half, he said, I've done everything I can do here to grow this business. It's doing great. They got an offer from an Australian company that wanted to take over and get their Department of Defense work, and sold after a year and a half. So, but you're right. When they pay a fair price and they've done okay, they, you know, there's no impediments to making that change of life again.
Exactly. I mean, it's an investment purchase, and just like buying any investment, it could go up, it could go down, it could stay flat. And returning to where we started, if you have a good equity position at the start, it gives you more flexibility to exit. I mean, we are in conversations right now where a person bought a quality manufacturing company and it's not the right fit for them. They want to exit and they would have to bring money to closing to sell the business. And so that is the obstacle to them selling. They aren't happy like you described. They want to sell, but can they sell if they've got to bring six figures to closing? And, you know, you got to sell that to your spouse who maybe you twisted their arm to get in this in the first place.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. I'm going to finish up on this subject with, you know, that something similar that you've got to know going in. And too many people say, oh, it would be really cool to make something. Well, do you have any manufacturing experience? Well, no. Have you ever been on a shop floor? No, but it'd be fun to make something. And then the spouse part, you know, usually one of my first questions to a buyer and a seller is, what does your spouse think about this? So let's finish up, Gregory. We had a good discussion. Let's just talk a little bit about what we're seeing in the market out there. I'll start this off. I PitchBook just had an article, say how much slower can PE firms get? I'm just seeing a general slowness of how things are moving along in not all cases, but in many. More attention going into signing a letter of intent, more, you know, slower pace on due diligence. Some banks, depending on the situation, just taking a little more time. I'm also seeing a little more, I guess if it's a smaller deal, and I define small deal as say under $1 million, $1.5 million, that things do move a little quicker. What are your thoughts?
I think it is taking a little longer. I will actually touch on a reason I think that is we, coming out of COVID with baby boomer generation retiring, have started to lose some talent out of this industry with knowledge, experience, problem solving skills. I mean, we know in our marketplace, I mean, we've lost icons. You've talked about Bill Pearsall, Pete McDowell retired, Dan Gibson retired, Kirk Edwards passed away, that there were people who had decades of experience of doing this right. And I think, like in many industries, a transition is occurring from one generation to the next. And without good mentorship, good systems and support, people are having to learn with a baptism by fire, and I think that creates maybe less success, slower progress on some of the deals.
I can't argue with that. And I also seen a plethora of franchise business brokers again. It seems to go in waves. And there's some really good ones, and there's some ones who probably shouldn't be in a business where it relies on them selling themselves, but it sounds good and people get their franchise fees. So, and don't train them as much as if you brought someone in or Bill had brought someone in, etc. So Gregory, thank you for this. Why don't you share how people can get hold of you?
Sure. I appreciate our collaboration and friendship. IBA, you can reach us at ibainc.com. IBAINC.com is our website. We have offices in Bellevue, Portland, Spokane, and Bend, and 16 intermediaries. Happy to meet with people anywhere in the Pacific Northwest. Corporate headquarters phone number of 425-454-3052.
Great. Well, Gregory, thank you again. As always, it was a good conversation. And I'm sure the listeners and viewers will get a lot out of this on what's going on in the buy-sell world. And more importantly, I think the biggest thing we talked about, the most important thing we talked about, was the value of, you know, honesty, trust, relationship. So I wish you well, my friend.
Thank you. Have a great summer.